Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden, and I'm here with co-host Jeff Patino, and we both work at the Binary Research Institute. It is here where we've spent the last several years researching the binary theory, the very ancient idea that our sun, like most stars, has a partner star, and that our orbit around this star indirectly produces a change in consciousness in the cycles of history that Plato called the Great Year. Almost every ancient culture on the face of the earth seemed to have belief or folklore about this cycle, and there's an increasing amount of scientific evidence that indicates it might be true. So that's really what this show is all about. We explore the science behind this cycle, and we have interviewed in past shows author Graham Hancock, the author of Fingerprints of the Gods, Robert Schock. No, he's coming up on a future show.
We've got John Major Jenkins.
He's a Mayan cosmologist. And we just interviewed John Burke, which he's in the can, so he'll be coming up soon. He's the author of Seed of Knowledge, Stone of Plenty. And, of course, we've had John Daring on the show. And John is a physicist, really an expert in subtle energy, and he's always been one of our favorites at the CPAC conference, and so we're glad to have him back again with us this week.
Yeah, in fact, this is actually part two of our interview with him, because we had so much fun talking to him last time and got so much great information that we only got about halfway through our questions.
And it's a deep subject. What John is really helping us to research is how this whole system might work. If we do go around a binary star, you know, what is it that would really cause this rise and fall of civilization that we seem to see in the archaeological record and that so much myth and folklore talks about? And John has been studying subtle energies, not only in his career as a physicist, but also sort of on the side, studying ancient cultures and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and he's literally been doing this for over 25 years, so he is the go-to guy on this stuff. And so we're thrilled to have him back, and like Walter mentioned, he'll be speaking at the CPAC conference coming up this October, October 13th to 15th at UCI, along with Graham Hancock and John Major Jenkins, Robert Schock, Claude Swanson, Jeff Marcy, astronomer at Berkeley. He's actually the guy who figured out how to find planets around other stars.
Also this year at CPAC, we will have John Anthony West, the rebel Egyptologist and symbologist that's really helping to rewrite Egyptian history. And Robert Schock will be there. He's the geologist at Boston University who works very closely with John Anthony West. And Robert was really one of the first to look at some of these ancient structures, particularly the Sphinx, and say out loud that it's a lot older than archaeologists tell us. Archaeologists currently put the date of the Sphinx at about 2500 BC or so, Khufu's reign. Khufu believed to have built the Great Pyramid there. But Robert's come along and said, hey, listen, this is made out of limestone, and indeed it's very hard limestone, and you have severe vertical weathering. This isn't horizontal wind-whipped weathering, but vertical. and some of these vertical chasms in the Sphinx, as well as in the retaining walls around the pit that holds the Sphinx, are 5, 6, 8 feet deep. And he's pointed out that the only way they could get there is if they happened with a lot of water. And the last time you had any significant water there was during the end of the last ice age. And so Robert will be going into all that at CPAC this fall.
Yeah, it'll be a great conference. If you'd like more information on the conference, visit the website www.cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Or you can find information just at our regular book website, which is loststarbook.com, and you can find out more about our own research there at the Binary Research Institute.
Well, you are listening to The Cosmic Influence. We will be right back with part two of our interview with John Daring.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with co-host Jeff Pitino. And today we are taking up with our interview of John Daring. John is a physicist that works at Sera Corp here in Orange County. Welcome, John.
Welcome, Walter. And Jeff, hi to you.
How are you doing? So to pick up from where we left off on the last show with you, what specifically may the ancients have been trying to tune with the structures that they were building?
Well, that's a good question. I think last time when we were talking, I mentioned that some of the structures showed features that, you know, were just unmistakable, in my opinion, as indications that the structure was intended to deliberately trap or magnify. I should probably use the word focus, because that magnify can kind of imply another type of a meaning as well. But to basically, shall we say, to focus energy coming in from somewhere outside, and the nature of the energy based on the designs would suggest that it was probably something, the closest analogy, and therefore probably the one that I think we could use at this point, would be electromagnetism. In other words, some form of either static electric field. You see that in the structure of the pyramid. It actually does, that's something that can even be measured now, it does actually trap and localize and, if you will, focus the Earth's natural electrostatic field, possibly magnetic fields, but in the area that I'm most interested in, it would be electromagnetic fields. These are ones that are time-varying, meaning that the field flips back and forth as a function of time. And that can be on a very short time scale. It could be many cycles per second, millions of cycles per second. In other words, these would be things like low-frequency radio waves, and this would indicate, of course, that they might have been looking at some form of power or wave energy coming in from outer space.
I was looking at a picture last night, John, of the Great Pyramid at Giza, and they had a diagram with the internal structure outlined there, and you know, when you look at the internal structure above the King's Chamber, they have what they call these relieving chambers. But if you sort of stand back and look at it, it looks like a pagoda. It's sort of all these layers. And I was wondering, you know, do you see any characteristics there in a structure like that that can be used to magnify or somehow enhance the energy?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that particular feature. In fact, the inside of the interior of the pyramid in general, the structure that you're referring to does look something like a pagoda. And in fact, it is intriguing that in electromagnetic physics, there's a type of antenna. In fact, most people are familiar with these. Everyone is probably familiar with the old-style TV antenna that sits on someone's roof, and it consists of a group of parallel metal bars.
Right.
Arrayed one after another. That's called an end-fire antenna. And there are multiple different versions of it, but it's basically the idea is you create a series of these things in a row, and they actually act. They feed each other and resonate. Basically, the best way to think of it is it's a tuned receiver so that the wavelength matches the spacing between those slabs in the case of the pyramid or the individual metal bars in the case of the more common rooftop antenna. The pagoda also has this structure, as do a number of other ancient temples, for example, those in Southeast Asia. Again, there's this interesting feature of something that's vertically oriented, like it's pointing towards something in the sky, but with the periodic spacing of plates or what we would see as roofs or eaves in the case of the pagoda. And yes, that type of structure is very suggestive of exactly what would have been built in there using the natural stone to kind of act, or in this case also, to give a directional component to some form of incoming wave. The interior of the pyramid also suggests that the passages are not there for the purposes of people walking around in. Anybody who's looked at the pyramid from an architectural standpoint realizes that, you know, why on earth would anybody make such an oddball set of passages? They, you know, you have some like the Grand Gallery that are very tall and have a kind of a peculiar cross-section, and then they narrow down through this little antechamber. There doesn't really appear to be a lot of rhyme or reason. The angles look strange. And yet, if one does a acoustic wave analysis, and this is some work that Dr. Jim Corum did a few years ago, so I really should basically give him full credit for this, at Sarah Corporation, he did a full three-dimensional acoustic model. What we found was that it makes perfect sense. Those inner passages are actually an acoustic transmission line resonator, and the antechamber that connects the King's Chamber, what's referred to as the King's Chamber, from the Grand Gallery and the rest of the passage network, is actually an acoustic filter that notches out anything but a few selected low frequencies. This would indicate, for example, why that little structure, so-called antechamber, has these interesting little fluted surfaces to it. It's the only part of the interior that has anything that you might call ornate, and it's an odd-looking ornate feature. Point being is that if you get books on waveguide engineering, which is the science of sending waves down passage or tube-like structures, you'll find that the Great Pyramid, the interior at least, doesn't actually look so mysterious. It looks rather common. It actually has many counterparts in microwave and radio wave engineering systems.
You know, on antennas, I can understand how they might work, and obviously they're outside, or as you mentioned, the television antenna on the roof. An antenna that's inside all this stone, you know, how's that work? How would that be picking up waves?
Well, to begin with, when you get down to the very low frequency end of the radio spectrum, I don't want to use the word transparent in the way that we think of with X-rays, the so-called ability of X-rays to penetrate through things. What it really means is most materials are just transparent or partially transparent. But at very low frequencies, radio waves that are well below the frequencies that are typically used for broadcast or cell communication or things of that sort, the depth at which the wave will go into the soil can be many kilometers. So it's not actually that the pyramid is this solid mass of stone. If you're at the right frequencies, actually it's quite transparent. But, of course, that could suggest something else as well. You'll note earlier I kind of gave a caveat. I said the closest thing we may have to understanding the type of energy they were using would be electromagnetism. My own suspicion is that it's something which is far more fundamental and actually underlies electromagnetic fields. So that we can see some comparisons, we can see some similarities to electromagnetic engineering. But what actually they were aware of and using is a force which I personally believe at this point we're unaware of in the general level of human scientific understanding at this time.
Yeah, that's interesting. In fact, I was at a few weeks ago a conference, the ICEM conference, the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine, and they spent a lot of time focusing on this idea that there are energy forces that we have yet to understand and even in some cases yet to theorize about that may in some way affect us as far as our own abilities and even our consciousness. And I know you and I and Walter have spoken in the past about the possibility of these forces affecting consciousness and the possibility of these monuments trying to harness that energy for those purposes. Describe from your experience and your knowledge, how might some of these forces affect human consciousness?
Well, let's kind of take a step back and think for just a moment. Human consciousness, at least in the case of the physical body, we can think of it as something a little bit akin to a computer. All right, that's maybe not a perfect analogy, but it's one that kind of works. It's a circuit. There's electrical currents flowing through it, and it produces an ability to be aware of the outside world, to process that information, to store data. You kind of get the analogy here. It's by no means a perfect one. Well, we know, first of all, that computers, just again thinking of the type of computer that might be on a person's desk, they are highly influenced by electrical and magnetic fields. I mean, this is one of the reasons we're told you don't put a strong magnet near the hard drive on a computer. Well, think of this perhaps in a little bit more constructive way. The human brain, this natural biological computer that we're endowed with, has basically evolved to exist in the Earth's environment. And that includes not just the range of temperatures and all of that good stuff, but it also includes the naturally occurring electric magnetic fields, which we know are here. Those can easily be measured. Naturally occurring electromagnetic fields. Our planet actually resonates continuously at a variety of very low frequencies, and we are also well aware of that. That's been known for quite a few years. And there may be a multiplicity of other types of electromagnetic fields and waves. What that would suggest, first of all, is that as with most living organisms, birds have learned, for example, other animals have learned to use the magnetic field for navigation. It would suggest that because we have grown up in this environment or evolved in it, we're attuned to it. Attuned to it in the sense that we probably would notice the absence of those fields. Okay, that's the first thing I'd like to mention. We can come back to that. But it's also a suggestion that the brain may require those fields for its normal functioning. If, for example, we had a naturally rising and falling electromagnetic field and it's going on 24 hours a day, would make sense that the brain might actually try to use that as something akin to the clock rate in a computer. So that if that signature becomes very faint, well, now the computer's kind of skipping data bits. It's basically going into this sort of irregular processing that computers do sometimes when they fail. When that signal is very strong and the brain is fully saturated with it, it can then go about and process data at its optimal rate. Now, that's admittedly a sort of a simplistic example, but what if we took a step further back and found that it was an outside influence in the case, perhaps the case of the sun? We know it does influence these fields on Earth very strongly. But that may not be the only influence. We we know now that Jupiter actually can have some influence on our electromagnetic environment. I speculate it probably goes much further than that and includes other star systems, that these actually have a more subtle influence but a very profound one. Stars themselves are sources of electromagnetic fields. I mean, after all, that's what light is. We're picking that up. Now, not every single star system may be of particular importance to us. I'm certainly not suggesting that, but it may be that specific objects would have this influence. Come back a little bit to human consciousness. The effects probably go deeper than this. We know, for example, that, Walter, I think you were telling me about some work that's been done at UCLA.
Yes, the work of Valerie Hunt. She was a professor of physiology there, and she had the Mu Room, where she put subjects in there to determine how they would react to the absence of just the ambient EM that's, you know, around us at all times.
And like you had mentioned, John, it turns out we're very aware of the absence of those fields.
Yes.
Right, yeah, because her patients just reacted very strongly. You know, some of them not only did poorly on the tests that she gave them to do, but they cried, they sobbed, they wanted out of the room.
Yeah, that would be indicative, of course, that the brain is not receiving something. You could almost think of it as like the electromagnetic equivalent of a vitamin. Well, her work is very fascinating, and of course I've mentioned the work of a scientist named Dr. Richard Dickow. Now, Richard's work actually went a little bit further. He worked on the introducing frequencies that are likely to exist under certain forms of electromagnetic environment on this planet, but the best way to say it is Richard's work looked at what would happen if frequencies that we know this planet is capable of naturally resonating at, but doesn't, if those frequencies were naturally present.
And with that thought, we're going to take a quick commercial break. You are listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back with our guest, John Daring.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Cruttenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com. Webcasting.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with co-host Jeff Pitino, and we are talking with John Daring, a physicist with CeraCorp. And John, just before the break, you were telling us about the work of Richard, what was his name?
Dick House.
Can you please tell us what the answer to the question is that he so profoundly...
He did some research that I find particularly relevant to this, and to kind of just quickly describe it. Now, this work was done with monkeys, but also a few volunteers. And of course, I need to stress that anytime that, of course, at least in the United States, that people are doing research, anytime humans are involved, there's an immense amount of protocol that people have to go through, and generally,
but that, not with monkeys.
Well, actually, with monkeys as well, but not even close to what you have to go through with humans. And so, the result, this type of work, of course, has to be done only when it is believed that the effect is going to be very safe. Now, let me explain why that was. He used pulsed magnetic fields whose intensity was a billion times weaker than the Earth's magnetic field. Right, so it's a very small amount. I should say, actually, probably ranging from about 100,000 times below the strength of the Earth's magnetic field to as much as a billion times below the Earth's magnetic field. And he pulsed these at frequencies which were as low as 3 or 4 times a second to as high as about 30 to maybe, I think they went up possibly to as high as 100 pulses per second. So this is a very, very low amplitude field. And at specific frequencies, meaning that in that range, but at particular pulses per cycle, pulses per second, he found that the brain responded powerfully, not even, I mean, far beyond what they were seeing in the UCLA work. What he found in this case was the brain would lock up on that frequency, and even after the machine was turned off, the brain would remain resonating at that frequency for up to 36 hours afterwards. At certain frequencies, the person or the animal was put into what was almost like an anesthesia state. At other frequencies, it became restless, but at a few, there was a profound increase in, I guess, what we would call the performance on cognitive skills, and at another frequency, the human volunteers, of which it was a very limited set of people, so obviously you can't consider this to be a definitive study, reported something a little bit like mystical or out-of-the-body experiences, oftentimes with a very strong sense of euphoria and even a feeling of, you know, ability to think more clearly that persisted for several days. After, I mean, we're only talking from a 15 or 20 minute exposure of just sitting inside this chair that had this pulsed coil going. This is an indication of two things. Number one, of course, that yes, the fields have an influence on the brain. Number two, that it doesn't take much of a field. This means probably the human nervous system, in my opinion, is designed to do this or evolved to do this. It's not an accident. This type of ability to pick up on a field that small in amplitude is extremely difficult to do, even if you're designing a piece of equipment to do that. So the chances that one could just, for example, have a biological system that would have that range of response is extremely unlikely, because nature would not have that in there unless it served a function. But the type of frequencies involved, we don't normally see at least they can occur on a transient basis on the Earth. The Earth has a series of other resonances which are not normally, you might say, excited or rung by the type of natural processes that occur here, at least not as often. This might be suggestive that in part of the cycle that we go into, we get closer to some object or some source of energy that potentially could excite that type of electromagnetic field on this Earth and, if you will, begin to produce a noticeable effect. You have to wonder, of course, it would be one thing if a person gets an exposure of this to 15 or 20 minutes. What would happen if this type of brain-enhancing frequency was going on for thousands of years? What would the successive generations be like? You know, perhaps this would account for these stories about higher ages.
Very possibly so. And, you know, going back to the Great Pyramid then for a minute, of course, we're told that these things are just used as tombs or possibly for initiation ceremonies. But, you know, it could be then that it is some sort of initiation ceremony, but one that the individual going through the ceremony is actually being transported to a higher space, at least a mental space, because of these features that you mentioned there.
Yeah, and I mean, John, as you know, we speak a lot about the Great Year and the idea of the rise and fall of the ages here on the show. And I know you've referred to the Great Year as a great machine, so I wonder, and you've mentioned here, kind of alluding to it a little bit briefly, that there might be some stellar object out there or objects that somehow influence us. Let's dive a little bit into the mechanics of how that might work.
Well, yeah, this is really the, in fact, this will be what I'm going to be talking about at the conference this year at CPEC 2006. You know, it's fine, first of all, and I think it's just the knowledge to mankind that we're in a binary star system is going to be an amazing scientific revelation. But nevertheless, that's fine if there's this approximately 24,000-year orbit where our sun and solar system orbits the center of mass it has with another star. But that doesn't really explain how that would have any type on the level of civilization on this planet. You know, I mean, that's how does one account for an orbit creating this apparent rise and fall in civilization, this cycle of the ages as it's referred to. And the thought, of course, and this comes from the book The Holy Science by Swami Sri Yukteswar, is that, as he explains, if we are in a binary orbit, that orbit, of course, means that the entire solar system, Earth included, is being moved gradually over 24,000 years from one point to a distant point, and then back along an elliptical path, typical orbital path. Well, what if that orbit, and this is what he suggests in his book, brought us closer to another third object?
And we'll have to talk about that third object right after a quick break here. You are listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back with our guest, John Darin.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now, it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com, and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Crittenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
ByRegion.net is the largest healing arts directory on the web. Our visitors are looking for holistic practitioners, schools, events, healing services, and products. Are you in healing arts? Become a member of ByRegion.net and get the best advertising values. You can increase your client base and your traffic. If you have a website, we can bring you more traffic. Want a website? Get a beautiful web display for only $4 a month. Become a member now. Mention HealthyLife.net and get 6 months free. Visit www.byregion.net or call 828-232-0016.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I am Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Crittenden, and we today are speaking with John Daring. John, we were just getting into the mechanics of how the binary system and Great Year might work, so let me just let you pick up where you were
at.
Yeah,
try to draw us a little mental picture then. So if our sun is going around another star, it's carrying the Earth with it, and during that cycle, we're going near a third point. Is that correct?
Yeah, you could think of it as imagine that you're out on a playground, for example, and somebody has drawn a large... could be circular or elliptical. Elliptical would be probably the natural form of the orbit, but it could, for simplicity, let's just assume it's a circle. Or you could think of yourself as being on a merry-go-round. Okay, you know, the sun is on, is one person seated on the one side of the merry-go-round, and opposite them is the is our binary star, and those two are orbiting about their center of mass. Now, a person standing off the merry-go-round. Next to it, we would periodically come sweeping around closer to them. That would be sort of the type of analogy that I'm thinking of here. In other words, as it is described in the book, The Holy Science, the binary orbit moves our solar system through space so that periodically as we're going around that circular track or elliptical track, we come closer to something called the grand center. And this grand center is described as a source of universal magnetism. Now, that, of course, has a, in the old Vedic texts and Hindu scriptures, that, of course, has a particular meaning. But I think the important thing for us to kind of focus on at this point is that it suggests that it is the source of a powerful, pervasive electromagnetic field of some type, a field which has a distinct effect or relationship on human consciousness and the ability or the level of awakening of the human brain. And therefore, as we get closer to this, we could expect more of an influence because we're coming in closer and closer. The field's going to be stronger, closer to this object, just as if you get closer to a magnet, the magnetic field is stronger. And as we recede from it, the effect diminishes, and it goes on like this as a cycle. And because the organisms on this Earth do appear to respond quite strongly to the the presence of electric and magnetic, electromagnetic, and possibly other types of fields, it would be safe to say that, yes, over 24,000 years, we would see a complete change in the, you might say, the way the nervous system, the level of operation, the level of capability or functioning in the nervous systems, and then it would be brought back to its starting point, and on this would go. Now, the interesting question that this raises is, well, then what is this grand center? And I think one of the interesting things about it is, it's even the name of it is quite interesting. It's not referred to necessarily as a star. So it may not be an obvious, simple stellar object or even a large stellar object. It may be something more like a region in space. Now, this, of course, is a rather strong and powerful revelation for many people who have only the viewpoint, the linear viewpoint in history, that, well, how could the ancients have known these things? But, of course, if there is a cycle, if there is an age, a series of ages going on here, we have to recall that this type of knowledge would have been something the human brain, the human, you know, civilization was aware of, could comprehend, could even research long ago. Possibly some of that information was preserved in records that survived the decline into the less enlightened ages.
Could have been. I was reading Holy Science myself and noticed that other references to this point in space are also Vishnu Nabhi or the seat of Brahma. And it's also related to a point of virtue. And a lot of myth and folklore, you find this idea that there's this virtue in the higher ages. I think even one of the old Greek poets has a poem about it.
Oh, Hesiod in Works and Days speaks a lot about the Golden Age being an age of virtue. And as the ages progress, virtue actually left the earth.
Yeah, one of the poems goes something like, she comes and plays openly with mankind in the Golden Age, grows weary in the silver, flees in the bronze, not to be seen in the iron, the lowest age. And so it sort of follows this schematic that you're talking about, where we get closer to this point that it may not be just electromagnetism. It affects mankind in such a way that things are better across the whole front.
Well, you know, we really are only just beginning to understand electromagnetism. I mean, we must remember that, in fact, it's in the Holy Science. It's also, you may have seen a text referred to as the Vimana Shastra. I mean, in the ancient world, there are records which talk of five types of electrical forces, of which we apparently only know one at this present stage of development. Some people have speculated this may be actually somehow related to the five fundamental forces, or four of which we know now. Perhaps there's a fifth one that we're not even aware of, or fully aware of. But at any rate, there is a suggestion that, yes, and I would even go so far as to say that in the Holy Science, Sri Yukteswar mentions that this universal magnetism is actually the source of all electrical powers. In other words, it is something that is more fundamental, that manifests itself as the different attributes that we would refer to as electrical and magnetic and electromagnetic. This implies, of course, that we are dealing with a type of energy, and I think subtle would be the appropriate term here, that might be very difficult for us to get a real handle on at the present time. So, again, that's why I tend to kind of emphasize, think of it basically, for want of a better description, as a type of magnetic field which is very beneficial, which is, as you said, the term virtue, yes, is used. You find that also in the Bible. There's that mention, actually, I think, in the book of Job, of a star cluster having a sweet influence on the earth. If I remember the scriptural context, this seems to have been an ancient concept. Certainly, there are entire poems and tributes to stars written in ancient times, describing their influence on human affairs.
Speaking of sweet influence, we need to remind people here in a quick break that they are listening to Cosmic Influence, and we will be right back.
If you are interested in the topics discussed on today's show, you'll want to see Walter Crittenden's award-winning film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. Why do civilizations fall and rise again? What did the ancients say about the cycle of the ages? The Great Year explores the possibility that the rise and fall of human culture might be related to our sun's motion around a companion star. Find out more about the celestial mechanics that bring higher ages of enlightenment and learn where we are today in this grand cycle of time. It's a message of hope and inspiration and answers many questions about the greatest enigmas of human history. Order the DVD today at thegreatyear.com. That's www.thegreatyear.com. www.thegreatyear.com.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Crittenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
In college, I took a lot of history and liberal arts classes, and frankly, I don't remember much of any of it. But as an adult, I find myself engrossed in fascinating programs on the A&E and History Channel. They've pretty much helped me to be pretty impressive at social functions, and I just found out today that I can purchase DVDs of my favorite A&E and History Channel programs right through HealthyLife.net. You should visit HealthyLife.net and order your favorite A&E and History Channel program DVDs as well, and then discover how many people you can impress during your next social occasion.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com. Is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Patino with our host, Walter Crittenden. Just a reminder, if at any point you'd like more information on the topics we're talking about in the show, please visit our website, www.loststarbook.com. Our guest today is physicist John Daring. We've been speaking to him about the cosmic influence and the nature of the Great Year and the nature of megaliths and what they may have been built for. John will also be speaking at the upcoming CPAC conference in October, from October 13th to 15th at UCI, along with Graham Hancock, John Major Jenkins, John Anthony Weston, and many more. If you'd like information on the conference, please visit that website at www.cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
So welcome back, John. And I think you were making reference to the Job quote in the Bible.
Cast thou by in the sweet influence of the Pleiades.
So could the Pleiades be the source of this influence that affects us during the Golden Ages?
You know, this is an interesting point that I covered in my talk at CPAC last year, and we'll go into quite a bit more depth this year at the 2006 conference. Yes, Pleiades is an interesting candidate because it is so often described as being some type of a center. Now, this is of an interesting revelation, I would imagine, to many people with kind of contemporary astronomical thinking, and it certainly is a puzzler for me in some ways because we tend to think of the centers as being the major things, points of mass that are known to be points of orbit for either a system or many systems.
Like the galactic center.
Yes, like the galactic center, which is sort of another obvious candidate for this. It seems to have kind of fit the description in a lot of ways. But the Pleiades is referred to time and time again as this, effectively, I mean, as a point of virtue, as something which actually has, this very uplifting influence on mankind. It is, I know it's referred to in the old Arabic as Al-Wasat, the central one. One reference that I found particularly interesting is the indigenous peoples in Australia have a name for it, which I cannot pronounce, unfortunately, but it means, it essentially means a great pivot point or turning center, a hinge point, like a fulcrum point, and it, they described it as having a very good influence a long time ago, that it had been very kind, to those people, but of course that effect presumably had diminished as the orbit had taken us further away from this point. It is, of course, also indicative that we may not really fully understand the nature of a lot of stellar objects. Now, again, I'm not in any way trying to belittle the work of modern astronomy. Far from it. I'm simply pointing out that there could be subtle forces being produced in some star systems, which at present we wouldn't know how to look for them. We wouldn't fully understand what type of signature, what type of signal we would be looking for.
Right, and I think modern astronomers would readily admit that there's a lot more we don't know than we do know. And, you know, what I've read about the Pleiades is that it's supposedly a very young and energetic system, the type of system where you might find magnetars, for example, these super dense, super magnetic stars. I believe their magnetic field is supposed to be 1,000 trillion times as great as the Earth's magnetic field. Also, the distance to the Pleiades has been a little difficult to pin down. I think it's generally put between 350 and 400 light years away, but it's changed a few times over the years.
Yes, and yeah. The Pleiades is an odd star system in another way, too. It has old stars mixed in it. They've actually found white dwarfs, which are an indication of stars which have effectively lived most of their lifetime. These would be main sequence stars that could be multiple billions of years past the present state where our sun is. So that's odd, for example. Why would there be such a population of old relics, you might say, and very young objects there? It's also recently been recognized as a source of radio emission, which was unknown, I think, even a decade ago. So there may, in fact, be an indication of these energetic objects. And magnetars is an example of something that just, 15 or 20 years ago was unthinkable. Now, here we are talking about an object in space, several of them that we know of, which have magnetic fields. As you said, they can be up to 1,000 trillion times the level of the Earth's magnetic field. Now, one wouldn't have to get too close to an object like that to get a magnetic field that might be, well, for example, maybe only a billionth of the Earth's magnetic field. But let's also think of another property of these objects. The energy is not necessarily steady state. Magnetars are a form of pulsar, so as they're spinning, there is a tendency for them to be emitting kind of, if you will, a burst or a click in the field as the object orients a stronger point, for example, a pole or one of these jets that they produce of radiation, so that you could think of a lighthouse kind of sweeping by several times a second, producing this pulse that might be actually what would set in motion or set in, ringing or oscillation, the type of frequencies that I was talking about with Richard Dickhout's work, for example. And one can actually go through the calculations and find that even over a distellar type of distance, an object like that actually would preserve a strong enough magnetic field at the Earth, with assuming a inverse square fall off, that yes, it might still have an influence if it was at a specific frequency where an effect could be suggested. Now, that right there is a rather startling fact, because it would be an indication that an object at a great distance, light years, could have a really rather overwhelming effect on human population if that object was emitting energy with the right, shall we say, characteristics, something that our brain would be looking for.
Well, if the magnetic characteristics are strong enough to wipe out our credit cards if we get close enough to it, that alone could produce a golden age for a lot of people now on Earth. But anyway, John, we need to take a short break here. Was that our last segment?
We're at the end of the show. John, I honestly don't know how we seem to run out of time with you every time. The shows just go so fast. But thank you very much for coming on again. And it's been great talking to you.
Well, Walter and Jeff, thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, we look forward to seeing you at UCI this fall at CPAC. Take care, John.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with co-host Jeff Pitino, and you've been listening to our second conversation with John Dehring, physicist at CERA. And he is an absolutely fascinating guy, and once again, he will be at our conference at UCI coming up this fall, October 13th to 15th.
And if you'd like more information on the conference, please visit the website www.cpaconline, that's C-P-A-K online. com. And again, if you'd like more information on this show or Walter's book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, please visit that website at loststarbook.com. Also, from that website, feel free to email us if you've got questions or comments about the show, or you've got someone that you'd like to hear us interview. We're always looking to bring new people onto the show.
And we'll make the call. Until then, bring on the higher ages.